Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there. Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. What is a veteran capable of who has suffered undiagnosed traumatic brain injury and PTSD along with two strokes? Well, in the 2024 Paralympics Games in Paris, Dennis Connors was capable of this.
Connors is digging deep. He looks at he's going to try and hold on for the bronze medal. But Quiroga is coming fast from behind. So Connors under pressure now. Here comes Jager. He's going to take the silver. Or is it Quiroga is coming on? And now Connors is coming through the middle. Who's going to take it? Connors is going to take it. What a finish. The American bursting through the middle and taking the silver medal.
Wow, that was amazing. We're about to hear his incredible story of perseverance. But first, I'd like to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USA, where we take care of our own, with additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Vision. Together, they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families. I say it every week, we love them too. Now I'm excited to introduce today's guest, Dennis Connors. As you saw earlier, he's a Paralympic silver medal cyclist, but that's not all. He's also a two-time world champion, Paralympic cyclist, a keynote speaker, and a U.S. Marine Corps veteran. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here. Excited.
Well, I'm happy to have you on the show. We've been working on this for a little while, so I'm glad you're here.
We made it.
Hey, before we get started, though, would you take a minute or so and tell the audience just a little bit about yourself and maybe a little bit about your background?
Yeah. So my background for military folks is I served 9 years in the United States Marine Corps from 2003 to 2012. I started off in the signals intelligence field as a cryptologic linguist. And then partway through my career, I made the decision to lateral move to the counterintelligence, human intelligence fields. Not a lot of people know out there that we have intelligence in the Marine Corps, but we do, and we're pretty good at it. During my time in, I ended up doing three combat tours, all in Iraq. I supported everything from the Army to a Marine Corps infantry unit, all the way up to a Tier 1 Special Operations unit. So I saw a lot of combat, which I didn't know. Like, I kind of just thought it was part of the job. And so for years after 2012, when I got out, I was suffering from PTSD that I didn't know about. And I also suffered from traumatic brain injuries that I didn't know about. And then in 2020, I had a second stroke. I had had a stroke at some point in the military. They figured out about 6 years after the fact. But then all that time since 2012, when I got out, got my graduate degree, University of Utah, outdoor recreation. Then in 2015, I took up probably what's the hardest job in the world, being a stay-at-home parent to two little ones. And I've been that for about 10 years, also while I've been competing as a Paralympic cyclist.
Well, I got to ask you one thing about the stroke. You had no indications when you had a stroke? Nothing? I mean, nothing changed at all?
In the first ones, I'm not sure. It's when they did the MRIs, the check for TBI, is when they found evidence of a stroke. And so they're not 100% sure when it happened, but they're pretty sure it happened during combat. It's right underneath where I had an impact to the back of my head during an interrogation.
Oh, wow. Hey, you left the Marine Corps in 2004, or 2012, I guess it was. Did the time in the military change you at all? I'm sure it changed me quite a bit. Did it change you any, Dennis?
Yeah, of course. You know, I entered the military right when I was 17 years old. I was a rock climber. So I had kind of like long, shaggy hair, and I was like really gangly. I could do like a whole bunch of pull-ups. And it completely changed who I was. You know, I was kind of like in this rock climbing free spirit world. And The Marine Corps is not that way. But yeah, they, I think the biggest thing that they instilled in me is just the discipline. The Marine Corps is for every Marine that goes through boot camp and through their time in the Marine Corps, they're extremely, extremely disciplined. And I took that away and still learned to take that to this very day in my Paralympic training and stay at home dad, keynote speaking, whatever I'm doing, I have to have that discipline. It also really, I think the second thing that the Marine Corps did was all Marines are held to a super high standard, right? So I continually still to this day hold myself to the highest standard of accountability, discipline, action, whatever we do. I do it at the world-class level because I know I want to represent the U.S. when I'm overseas competing for the team. And I also want to represent the Marine Corps. So I just hold myself to the highest standard.
Yeah. You know, one of the things when you're just talking all the time, you're just thinking, I went in at 17 in the Army, though. And it made me grow up. I mean, mm-hmm. I went from 17 to 55 when I went to war. So it really changed. It changed me a great deal. And we'll get into that just a little bit later. Hey, a lot of soldiers come back from deployments with mm-hmm. mental health issues. When did you realize you had issues like, you know, like PTSD? I mean, I got to tell you. Oh, go ahead, then.
No. Yeah. Go ahead. Sir. Okay, I can tell.
No. Go ahead. We'll go back and forth there for a minute.
Yeah, you go. Like Oregon drivers.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I had PTSD for years because, I mean, I thought PTSD, and I told people this when I got out, I was like, PTSD is for weak people, like people who couldn't handle it. And so with mine, I just buried it down so deep, partially because one, I didn't know how to talk about it. Two, everything I did in the intel world was classified. And then once I got to the tier one level, it was like super classified. So I didn't know how to talk about it. I couldn't talk to my wife about it. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. So I buried it super deep. So it festered for years and it just festered. And then finally it would start to come out as like nightmares. So it had to come out somehow, right? And it would, for me, it would come out in nightmares to the point where like it would wake my wife up in the middle of the night. I used to joke that I slept two nights in about 6 years. And it was both times when I was like in a really remote place and it was very quiet and peaceful and surrounded by a lot of natural world. But then it festered to a point where I couldn't talk about it. And I had something really bad happen when I was working with an asset in Iraq. And I actually had multiple hallucinations and then literally had a hallucination in front of my wife. And she was like, okay, we were driving. And she was like, get out of the car, I'm taking over. And then we kind of put that aside. She was like, what was that all about? And I had to just bury it again. And eventually it just came out. And it was about 6 years from the time I got out to the point where it had essentially taken over my life.
Yeah, I think I told you when I came back, this is years ago, mm-hmm. come back out of Vietnam, that for about 2 to 3 years there, I dealt with some issues that I didn't know what was going on. I was like you. I came in at 17. At 18, I went to war and then come out at 19. And then it was just a struggle. And I really, I don't know about you, I really didn't want to say anything because I didn't want people to look at me any differently. You know, so I sort of kept it to myself and I really didn't know what to do other than just sort of deal with the issues. And eventually it got a little better. We'll talk about that in a little while. Hey, you gave a TED talk. You began by telling about the night you were planning on taking your own life.
Yep.
When was that? And what made you stop? What stopped you?
Well, I think going back a little bit before that with the PTSD, I think I also had what we mentioned earlier is those undiagnosed traumatic brain injuries. Right. And what we know now, we didn't know it a lot back, you know, 10 years ago, but we do know now that those TBIs make all your PTSD symptoms way worse. Right. And I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't be open. I couldn't be vulnerable. I couldn't do anything. And I was just felt like I was failing all the time. And I wasn't used to failing. And that's not something we, as Marines, veterans, special operators, whatever, we don't take failure easily. Like, we learn from it, but we don't handle it very well. And I was trying to do all of this by myself. For some reason, in the military, you know, from day one, they teach us teamwork. We live and die by teamwork. And then when we get out, we try to handle it ourselves. And for me, it just got to this point in 2018 where I felt like I was no longer an asset to my family, an asset to society. I felt like I was a liability, right? And with those TBIs and all those thoughts and all the negative things that were happening inside my brain and couldn't talk about them, I thought the only way it was like, okay, you know what? I'll just take myself out of the fight. And there was something I said that night where my wife, fortunately, knowing who I am, she caught it. And she flipped the lights on and immediately was like, what did you say? What is this talking about? And I backtracked and I, oh, nothing, you know, just like you, a lot of suicidal people do. But she kept me up all night. She got the kids, pulled them in bed with us. They were really little at the time. And I just broke that night. And I decided, you know, in my first step in taking vulnerability, I decided that I would get help. I would talk to a therapist. And it took a while. Like, it took like going through multiple therapists to figure out how I could talk about it, because I still didn't understand how to talk about it, especially with that classified side of it. But we learned to talk around it, right? Talk around what the specific classified parts would be and to talk about what was affecting me. And so through the help of that therapist and then me taking my first steps in vulnerability, I was able to get better. And it took a process of 2 years. You know, I worked with a bunch of different veterans organizations. That's when I kind of started cycling and just using exercise and diet, nutrition, and then also deciding that I needed to do this myself. Nobody was going to fix me. I had to fix myself. And slowly over time, for about 2 years, it got completely better. And I had made a 180 by 2020.
Yeah, I had so many things that happened to me when I was sort of keeping things to myself. I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but I hit an E7 one time. I was, and I didn't realize I did it. I mean, he got that close to my face, and all of a sudden I hit him and knocked him to the ground. Anyway, it's a long story short, and lucky they didn't court-martial me. But I didn't know how to deal with those issues. To this day, I probably still don't know how I was lucky enough to work out them. I don't think you'll ever work out them. I think you learn how to live with them.
Yep.
But what happened is I started talking more about those issues, and I was real open about it. And I started telling people how I felt, and I didn't hold anything back. And it really helped me. In fact, I went to a long time ago. I went to a therapist, and I got in there and started talking, and then she talked to me for about 5 minutes. And I was still in that angry issues, I think, or angry issues. And finally, I just got up and says, "Hey, you can't help me," and left. I mean, I guess she couldn't relate to how I felt, and it bothered me, and it really just sort of pissed me off a little bit. And so I just thought, I wasn't sure how to talk about it. So I started talking to more veterans about the issues, and they could identify, you know, what I was going through, and they understood. And so it made me feel better anyway. I don't think you ever work through it. I don't think you ever get out of it. I think it's always there, but you learn how to shelf it a little bit.
Yeah.
Did you find finally taking talking about it really helped you in recovery? I mean, it helped me a great deal. Did talking about it help you?
Yeah, I think talking about it is what helped me the most.
Yeah.
Talking about it, you know, you have to learn. You had to take a step back, and you had to, you know, be a little bit more humble and learn that vulnerability piece and how to be vulnerable and open. And just like you said, I went through multiple therapists until I finally found one. She was actually a reserve military officer. She was a psychologist for a National Guard unit here. And so she had done a deployment, right? So she didn't do the same things, because a lot of veterans, we have different experiences in the military.
Yes, absolutely.
So she couldn't exactly relate. But when I was talking and using acronyms and I could talk openly and didn't have to explain everything. And that was that first step, and she helped. And then I joined I was doing this cycling thing and talking with other veterans And I think it was really important that not only did I talk to other veterans, but I talked to veterans who had something that we enjoyed together, right? And that wasn't just being a veteran. Like, we're all veterans and we all like cycling. So not only were we talking about veteran stuff and, you know, inter-service rivalries and why are the Air Force guys always dropped and, you know, like messing around, we were able to come together at the night and talk and have this kind of shared suffering of these really long bike rides. And that's when I really opened up. And I had gone on these trips down the coast of California multiple times, not knowing that I had the PTSD at the time. I did my first trip in 2016. And I was like, oh, I'm here to help others. And then I did my second trip. And then my third trip in 2018 was after I had that stopped suicide. And I really just opened up and let everybody, like, I was like, you know what, guys, I've been here trying to think I'm helping others, but really I need help.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, I think the suicide probably scared the heck out of you, even though just saying, hey man, I can't believe I got that far to even talking about or thinking about taking my own life. One of the things I always worried about was, I was afraid that I would hurt somebody or kill somebody. Mm-hmm. I really was. I mean, because you get so angry and you sort of build that pressure builds up on you. You just don't know. It's like your head's going to explode and you don't know what to do. And and when I, again, going back to when I started talking about it, started expressing how I felt, it just really took a lot of pressure off you. Even today, when you talk about that stuff that, you know, people say it, like I said, they think it goes away. It don't go away. It's always there in the back of your brain. And certain things, certain words or things people say, or you get in a discussion about something, it'll make it pop back up. Hey, yeah. How long did it take? Well, go ahead, Dylan.
That's it. I think what you said, like, you learn to live with it, right? So then if you can establish some tools or some ways to live with it, like, I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's... Again, this is what I do. If I get in that environment and I hear those things or I know something's going to trigger me, I just sort of try to turn them out or go somewhere else or just get by myself and just say, hey, no, okay, I heard that, but I'm just not going to address whatever that issue is. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it gets any easier. I don't think it ever gets easier. But again, I guess you just learn how to deal with those issues. And sometimes you just got to step back. You know, you got to pull yourself back a little bit and think about it. Hey, how long did it take you to learn to live? We were talking about it, right? To live with the issues and actually begin to feel better. I feel better every day, but I think you have highs and lows in life.
You do.
Did you start to live with it and feel any better or any different, I guess?
It did. I mean, it took probably 6 months, I would say. And I did make a decision to be vulnerable and take some medication that helped me get back to that baseline of sleep. The doctors recognize, like, you're not sleeping. And when you can't sleep, nothing else works. Like, nothing works unless you're sleeping. It is the foundational for everything. And especially now as an athlete, I understand the importance of sleep as a number one indicator of performance. But it took, from the point that happened, I would say by the beginning, end of 2019, beginning of 2020, I had really made a turning point. And I was off that medication by 2020, and I had learned from it, and I was completely just, you know, I had separated from it, and I had learned I'm cured, but I had learned how to manage it and how I'm going to live with it.
Yeah.
And
a lot of people try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I, right when I had my second stroke. So,
You know, a lot of people self-medicate, either drink a lot of alcohol or take drugs and stuff like that. And it really was... What when they come out, if they don't have somebody to talk to, they you know, go to alcohol or drugs or whatever. Mm-hmm. That really makes it tough. Hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you got into Paralympic cycling. So I know you're a good Marine. You're not going to go there. Stay right there. I'll be right back.
All right.
This is your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major. If you're enjoying this discussion, I know that you are, because we're talking about people that struggle. People that sometimes don't know they're struggling and they need help. They need somebody to talk to, somebody to tell them exactly, you know, what's going on in their life. Because it's about you and it's about Dennis. It's about all of us sticking together. Please like us, click on that subscribe button below. Be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. I'll be right back after word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're talking with U.S. Marine Corps veteran and Paralympic cyclist champion and keynote speaker Dennis Connors. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know a way about to support the work we're doing here at the American Freedom Foundation on behalf of our veterans and families. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of or some property you have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Hey, Dennis, how did you get into Paralympic cycling? This got to be a long story right there. I mean, I got to hear this.
All right. So I'll try to keep it as brief as I can.
No, but, no, don't keep me. I want to hear all the good things about it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that group that I was cycling with, when we moved to Oregon, I kind of stopped the climbing. I was doing rock climbing a lot in Salt Lake City, but it was more difficult to climb in Oregon. It just wasn't as accessible. So I kind of picked up cycling. I could put the kids in a trailer and I could just ride. And that was super important for my PTSD health is, you know, when I was in the military, I was working out every single day hard, right? And so you're wearing yourself out. And that is a huge benefit of mental health is wearing yourself down, like just exhausted, not like a little run, but like exhausted. And I was getting that out of cycling. And so I was doing those group rides with the veterans down the coast of California with an organization called Project Hero. And I was still pretty new to like actual road cycling. Like I said, 2016, I did that first event. 2017, I did my second event. 2016, it was like, I just need to finish this thing. I'd never ridden more than like 20 miles. And I think the shortest ride on that ride is 45 miles one day, up to 105 miles another day, like 7 days in a row. And
that's why I watch it on TV. That's why I watch it. I don't want to.
So then it was like, it was do that. And then the second year I was like, I want to be in the fast group because they ride in different groups. So then I like rode a bunch more 2017. I made it through the fast group and started riding with this female veteran, her name's Sean. And she, during my first trip, she had just come back from the Rio Paralympic Games and brought her gold medals and kind of inspired everybody. She was world champion. And it was like, wow, this is really cool. And then in 2018, when I opened up to the veterans and I was really like, I need help. Sean was like, hey, why don't you're like getting stronger. It's like, obviously you're pretty fit. We know your background. Why don't you come try Paralympic cycling? And I was like, well, I'm not disabled. And this guy, like another veteran, like literally starts laughing. And he's like, what about your traumatic brain injuries? And I was like, dude, I don't have any traumatic. What are you talking about? Because traumatic brain injury to me was like very extreme.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, and everybody's laughing at me. They're like, look, Dennis, you ride your bike like a 3-year-old. Like you're on it, but you're not super balanced. And you veer left. And there's a reason why you're always like in front of the group or behind the group. because we're not going to ride next to you because it's not safe. And I'm like, oh. And so I talked to them and I'm like, really, you guys think these are traumatic brain injuries? And they're like, yeah. Yes, Dennis, you need to. And so I talked to my doctor and he was like, well, what does the MRI say? And I'm like, I've never had an MRI. The Marine Corps didn't give me one. And he was shocked, right? So he sets me up with a neurologist. Neurologist checks me out. He's like, yeah, you have some balance disorder things going on. Let's give you an MRI. And like the next morning at 8 a.m., I get a call from the neurologist. And he was like, you clearly have had TBIs, multiple. How many concussions on top of these have you had? So we go through my whole military history. And so every time, you know, you hit your head and you get a concussion, and then you do it again, and again, and again, and again, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. So he's like, yes, clearly these are affecting your balance and your coordination. I thought I was just uncoordinated and clumsy, but I felt totally vindicated when they're like, no, you have injuries. And then he goes, hey, you also had a stroke in your cerebellum at some point. So I'm like, oh, wow, okay. Like, and I'm like, is that why I'm not super balanced on a bike? And he's like, yeah, very much so. So then I message Sean back, and I'm like, hey, thank you. Like, I found out that I have TBIs. I'm going to go through the VA process. I really appreciate, like, your help. And she says, hey, like, that is a qualifying disability for paracycling. And I was like, oh. She's like, you should come out to a national championships. And then this was in 2019, and go through what's called classification. It's how they determine what classification you're going to be in. So we compete against people with like disabilities, and they'll put you in a class and then you can race. But I had like no paperwork showing all of my history, right? Just like this one MRI and then some military history, but all of my stuff, like none of it's written down because of what I did in the military, right? So then I go to classification. She says, hey, you can stay with me and my coach, and I'll kind of walk you through the process. And we'll kind of show you the ropes, and you can come to a race and see if you like it. So I did. I went, 2019, I went and I got classified on a normal two-wheel bike. And I did my first race, and I got my butt kicked, and I was like, whoa, these guys are fit. Like, these guys are strong. And I was with her coach, who became my coach after that. I was like, I'm all in on this. This is awesome, right? I can continue to do this. I can train. I can have a goal. I can push towards it. You know, I can do it while the kids are napping or at home, whatever. It works out really well. And I go home and I start training. Simon, who is the coach, who's still my coach to this day, becomes my coach. He starts training me, and I'm hooked. I'm in paracycling, right? Well, this is now end of 2019. Well, we all know what happened in the beginning of 2020, right? Pandemic start. Everything shuts down. Races are done. We're like, okay, I'm just going to continue training. So that was in March. And then somehow in May of 2020, I had a second stroke. It just came on kind of clearly over the day. And by evening, I was in a stroke, and they took me to the emergency room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it was hard because it was 2020. The emergency room was full. And here I come, like a fit, young guy, like with a history of traumatic brain injury and migraines, into the emergency room. They go through my history. They think it's a migraine. They pump me full of a bunch of painkillers and send me back on my way. And for two more days, I lost function, and then it stopped, and I regained function, and I ended up going back to my TBI doctor, and she was like, dude, you had a stroke. Like, that wasn't a migraine. Like, she reviewed the CT scan, I think, or MRI, whatever they took to the emergency room, and my whole left side was basically paralyzed. It, like, barely functioned. I couldn't walk. Like, so she put me in physical therapy, and for 9 months, I just went through physical therapy 3 days a week, you know, masked up, everything, because I'm going into the hospital. Family can't come with me. My wife's dropping me off. I finally gain enough function back to drive so I can drive myself. And for 9 months, I'm in physical therapy, driving her absolutely crazy because I'm like, when can I get back on a bike? When can I ride again? And so then I had one of my bikes. I kept trying to ride it in the grass. It looked like a kindergartner trying to ride a bike for the first time. It was not happening, but I still had my coach. And luckily my coach has been around Paralympic cycling for a long time. So he then said, well, why don't we put you on a trike? You know, at least it will be stable and you can ride. Like you can ride around the neighborhood, you can ride. And so I ended up getting a rear axle to convert my bicycle to a tricycle and got on it and was like, oh, dang it. Like I should have been on this from the get-go, like from the start, even before this stroke. This is way easier to ride. And so I picked up the trike and I just started training on that, getting function back. I think cycling really helped me get all that function back. I still have balance issues. I still have weakness issues on my left side. I only have about 30%, 30, maybe 40 on a good day percent strength on my left side. So I walk with forearm crutches. I have a brace on my left leg that I wear to help kind of guide where my leg is going and tell my brain, this is where your leg is. But I ride the trike and I kind of took off in it. And in 2021, did my first race, ended up winning that race. On the trike, and the rest is kind of history. It took off from there.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm sitting here thinking all the time, right? You know, I've rode one of those trikes before. Sometimes their balance isn't as good as you think, and they're easy to flip over. Yeah, they're easy to flip over, aren't they?
Yes, it's actually quite interesting that they put all guys with balance disorders on the least stable bike.
Yeah.
So we crash a lot.
I thought so.
Everybody watches the trike race. It's like, oh, there's a bunch of corners there. Like, line up. The trike riders are coming around the corner. Like, get the popcorn ready. Like, this is going to be entertaining.
Hey, when did the wins really start piling up? And when did it, you know, I guess you got a whole bunch of wins. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah. So I did that first race in 2021, and the Paralympic Games were delayed out of 2020 into 2021. But because I hadn't gone through the international classification, I wasn't eligible to go to the international race that would, I was eligible if I went by myself, but I wasn't comfortable going to Europe for 2 weeks alone during the pandemic with no help, kind of new to my stroke still. And so I ended up not going, but I was winning in the trike kind of right away. And so I did a race. I went to an international race where the team got me internationally classified. It was the World Championships in 2021. I ended up getting third place there in the time trial, which is kind of a race against the clock. And then fourth in the road race, which is kind of the mass start, more typical cycling race. Like you see, everybody lines up, first one across the finish line wins. And I was like, oh, I think I can do this. And then the next year, 2022, I qualified for the team, for Team USA, and went to my first World Cup, and I won both of those races. Then the second World Cup, I ended up getting a second place in that one, and then the World Championships that year, got a second place. 2023, won a couple World Cups, couple more podiums as well, and ended up winning World Championships in 2023 and became World Champion.
Wow, what a heck of an accomplishment there! That's for sure. Yeah, we saw a clip at the beginning of the show, Aaron, and just to go back, so our audience gets this again. You won a Paralympic silver medal in Paris, which is a heck of an accomplishment. We saw a clip at the beginning of the show, and you won those two world championships. Does any of those, I'm talking about any of them, stand out as a highlight in your career so far? I mean, is one of them better than the rest? I mean, they're all winning, but is one special to you?
Yeah, I think that first world championships was really, really special. It took a lot. I had stomach flu. Like the whole team got like a stomach flu virus like a couple days before. So I was literally sitting in the chair like, I don't know if I can even start this race. And I got dropped off the back of the race with 3 kilometers to go. And I was able to get back into the group. And then I just made a move to get to the front. And I had a small gap. And I just turned and was like, dude, you can win this. And I just full gas to the top. I think I had every spiritual being I could figure out pushing me to the finish line of that one. So for me, like personally, I think that was the big one. But then that Paralympic medal, I worked so hard over the years, like just getting back to strength, recovering from PTSD, recovering from the stroke, coming up with a system so I could do this. It's not all like easy, like, oh yeah, I just was winning. Like there was so much pain, there was tears, there was, you know, battles inside the house. There was all of this stuff, tons of sacrifice for my family. And when I made it to the Paris Games, that was the goal. It was like, just make it to the Games. And then the Games, it's very different because it's not the whole field that is there, because countries only get a certain amount of spots. So the fields are smaller and it's more of like a culmination event. And the most important part for me was my family got to come and experience it with me. And it was like a, we did this together. And then I did it for not only for them, but for the country, for all the veterans who don't think they could like recover from something, you know, whether it be PTSD, a physical disability, you know, a setback in their life. Like there is a way to get there. And so I would have loved to win a gold medal at the Paris Paralympic Games. And I was totally capable of it. I just missed the move. Like a guy went and I was off the back for a second recovering. And I just simply missed the move. And so I made a tactical error, but coming around and winning the second place, that silver medal. And then just to like see my family across the street, all my supporters, friends had come, my parents were there, my in-laws were there, like everybody, just seeing them and being like, hey, this one is for all of us, not just me. Like the world championships, that one was for me, but this one is for everybody else. And so to be able to dig that deep and do something for everybody else was just incredible.
I watched that clip. I watched it, you know, and hard. I thought, I got to say, when I was watching the clip, I thought, he's back there. He's not going to get in there. And all of a sudden at the very end, you sort of broke around and we got through that. I mean, that was incredible. But I'm going to say one thing. We got to take a quick break. I'm going to say one more thing. You're like everybody. Well, not like everybody else. You won an Olympic medal. So you're better than a lot of people anyway. but you got to have purpose in your life. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have. You have purpose in your life, and you want to win. You're a winner. So my hat's off to you. I was telling somebody the other day, I wish I could win some kind of medal, but the only medal I ever got, I got a couple of ribbons on my uniform, I guess, but I did okay, but not as good as you. You really set the mark pretty high. That's for doggone sure. So, hey, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, I like to talk about the four pillars of perseverance that have guided you through your journey. So I know you're a good Marine. Stay right there again. Don't go anywhere. Now here's a word from one more of the great organizations that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with a Paralympic cycling champion, keynote speaker, and U.S. Marine Corps veteran, Dennis Connors. Remember, you know, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please let me know what you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at SMATilley@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Hey, Dennis, during our prep call, you talked to us about the four pillars of perseverance. Would you share that concept with the audience?
Yeah. So what I came up with kind of during that time between my the PTSD problems and the stroke. You know, I had gone through something so dark that once I started thinking about it later, I had to wrap like a framework around it. And eventually that's what I did my TEDx talk on, right? It was like, hey, like I had all this and I needed to wrap some sort of framework around it. And what I learned, one lesson that we learned as intelligence collectors is you can do all the cool high speed, like intelligence work in the world, right? Like doing like the cool dead drops and all the spy school stuff and all of the stuff. All you're doing is getting a piece of information. If you cannot communicate that piece of information to those who need it, all of that cool guy stuff you did is completely useless. And I was talking with one of my best friends and he was like, Dennis, like you have this story that you need to share of how you got through all of this, right? Somebody is going to learn from it. And then I was like, oh, this is a piece of information that I need to share. I have this. I did all of these things. You know, I've won all these medals. I've done all this. It doesn't matter. If I can't share how I did it and communicate it properly, why? Why am I doing it? So when I got asked to do TED, that's what I wanted to talk about. That was my idea that was worth sharing, is like, how did I overcome all of this? And what I was able to do is wrap myself around this framework of these four pillars of redefining perseverance. And when we think perseverance the traditional way, we kind of think of grit. And I think grit is really important. Grit is one of the number one indicators of success. And grit will get you through things in the short term. But I think we kind of have to decouple perseverance and grit. And so grit is great when I'm in a bike race, it's the world championships, and I'm dropped 3 kilometers out, and I just need to put my head down and hammer and get to the end of the bike race. That, in my world, is grit. We're doing something hard and sticking with it. Perseverance is long-term, and I came up with these four pillars of perseverance. And the first is having vulnerability. And vulnerability doesn't mean, you know, just opening up and being like, oh, here's all my issues and here's my problems and somebody fix me, right? Vulnerability is simply being brave enough to ask for help, to recognize that you need to do something about it, and open what we called a conversational gate, right? So once that conversational gate is open and you've been vulnerable to take that first step and say, I need help, or I'm going to see a therapist, or I need help with this, or even at work in the corporate world, like I'm struggling to understand. Because a lot of times people at work, they don't want to be vulnerable because they look like, hey, I look like I don't know what I'm doing. Or as a leader, the other side of the fence, right? Being vulnerable and being like, man, I'm not sure what to do here. Let me ask my team. That's a very vulnerable moment. So having that vulnerability to open that conversational gate and then being brave enough to step through it. To me, that is vulnerability, right? And then the second pillar that I came up with is this pillar of self-love. And self-love is different than self-confidence. Like back in 2018, I had all the self-confidence in the world, right? I was super cool. Like I was walking high, like tall, proud Marine, like special operator. I'd do all this cool stuff, but I didn't think I was worthy, right? And I didn't have a lot of self-love for who I was. I had a lot of self-confidence based on what I did, but I didn't have a lot of self-love for simply being me. And I realized through therapy that, hey, all these people out there love me for simply just being who I am. And if they can love me, all these people, for simply just Dennis, not for what I've done or for all these achievements, then why can't I love myself and simply just be enough? And that's a huge step to take, is no matter what happens in your life, you win races, you lose races, I had a really hard time racing last year in 2025. I did terribly. And so, you know, my self-confidence could drop, but I had to ensure that my self-love and my self-worth was still there. Like no matter if I'm failing races or winning races, I'm still the same person and everybody still loves me and I'm worthy of being loved. And then, so those kind of balance out. And then once you know your vulnerabilities and what you're working on, and you've opened yourself up to receiving self-love, that's when you can do the third pillar and take disciplined action. And I say disciplined action versus just regular action, because you really want to make sure that you're taking specific action against like a vulnerability or something you want to work on. You're not just taking action to take action. You're not just like, oh, I got to fix this. You're taking disciplined action, right? And I did that with my cycling. Like, okay, I can't ride a bike anymore. I'm going to try this trike. And then I go and I get my butt kicked in my first race internationally. And so I'm like, okay, I need to take disciplined action. I'm not good at turning. I'm not good at sprinting. I'm not good at riding uphills or coming out of the seat. So I work on those. So specific actions, whether it's cycling or mental health or at work, you take that disciplined action. And then the fourth pillar, and this is often the most overlooked pillar out of all of them, is finding that community. Just like we talked about with veterans, finding community in something that you love and other people also love, right? I talked about a lot of times veterans, like, it's hard for even with like, oh, let's get a group of veterans together. Well, not everybody's going to have the same experiences, or they're going to get along, or, you know, that's why I think that cycling thing was so important, that cycling aspect of a veterans group, or, you know, a whatever you're into, find a group and a community that you can lean on, because they really will support you. If you show that you're passionate about that, people who are passionate about that topic as well, they want you in their community and they will support you. And so finding community and leaning on your community is really, really important. So those are kind of the four pillars that I established: the vulnerability, the self-love, disciplined action, and community.
Oh, wow. You're right on target with everyone. Self-love and finding your community and all of those are real strong. I think a lot of veterans, though, just what you said at the end there, struggle to find that community. Mm-hmm. And they've trouble. And really, when you got into cycling, you found a community of veterans that spoke the same language you did, that went through a lot of the same things you did, so they could identify with you with a lot of stuff you're talking about. The other thing is, I think you can let, I don't have much hair, but you can let your hair down a little bit when talking about those things, and they fully understood what you was talking about. So that's some great advice. You ought to publish those and put them on social media and let people see those all the time and think about them. Yeah. The other thing is, and I liked everything you said, but self-love, love yourself. I tell people all the time, believe in yourself. And so many people don't believe in themselves, and they get misguided, or somebody knocks them down and they struggle to get back on your feet. Believe in yourself each and every day and keep pushing. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, Dennis, you've got an amazing story. It's inspiring. From being a day away from taking your own life to becoming a world champion athlete. Yeah. Oh, man, I can't even think about that. And now a sought-after public speaker sharing your journey. I would tell you that keep sharing your journey. That's so important, because I tell veterans all the time that one of the disadvantages to veterans is we don't tell our story, and we keep it to ourselves. We don't even tell our story to our family sometimes, and they don't know the kind of things that you're struggling with. What do you hope people will take away from, you know, what they heard today or what we talked about today?
Great question. I think the biggest thing is, you know, no matter what you're struggling with in life, you know, whether it be a mental health crisis, a financial issue, a problem with in a relationship, problem at work, even something as simple as like a project at work not working, right? Like, or something happening. There's always a way through it, right? There's never not a way. And you just have to establish a framework. And you could use my four pillars if you want. You could use them for anything. You know, like you said, I do keynotes. I talk to businesses. I talk to business leaders even about establishing four pillars about business problems, not even about life problems, right? So whatever you're struggling with, there is a way out, right? Like, I had hit rock bottom. I had gone somewhere so dark. I got my way out. And then when I had that second stroke, it was more of like a speed bump, right? There was a way through that. It wasn't like a man, like I could, everybody could have said like, oh, when you had that second stroke, nobody would have blamed me if I just stopped. They would have been like, wow, you've been through a lot. But I think there's always that way out, right? There's always that way through. And if you have enough drive and you take disciplined action and you lean on your community, then you'll be able to make your way through anything.
Yeah. I think that's what happens to a lot of people. They just quit and sit on a couch and just try to figure out a way to die, to be honest with you.
Right.
You know, or take their life right. By suicide. They just sort of give up. And the people are listening to them. And everybody struggles. Everybody has issues. But you got to figure out, you know, just like you just said, when you hit rock bottom, how do you go back up? Just right. Don't quit. Just keep pushing. Hey, I've got just a couple more questions for you. First of all, let me tell you, it's been a great discussion.
Thank you.
I enjoy what you're doing. And certainly, if I can ever help you in any way, please let me know. Especially being from the same neck of the woods. I mean, even though I live across the bridge from you a little bit there, but let me know. Hey, one last thing.
Yeah.
Now, the Summer Olympics or Paralympics is coming up in Los Angeles, I think in 2028. Oh, yeah. I got a big question for you now. Will I see you there?
Well, it's really hard to qualify for any Team USA member, right? It's almost harder to qualify for the team than it is to win a medal at the games. But I'm working my butt off already. I'm working with the team, working with my coaches and my support network. And the goal is not only will you see me there, the goal is a gold medal. And that gold medal on home games, home turf, you know, I want to hold that thing and I want to hear that national anthem play in our own country.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Dennis, I want to thank you so much for, I hope we covered everything you want to talk about. I don't know.
Definitely.
We're going to wrap it up here. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show and God bless you for what you're doing and keep up the good work. And again, let me know if I can ever help you with anything. And again, thanks for who you are and thanks for setting the standard for a lot of people, a great role model, not just for your community, but for all the veterans out there.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again to Dennis Connors for being with us. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. You've been enjoying your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board and partnership with Recruit Military and Upline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And if you like what we're doing at Your Next Mission, please click on our subscribe below, and don't forget to click on the bell to receive notifications of our upcoming video podcast. Together, you know, we can make a difference in all the lives of our veteran community. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Dennis for joining us. And I think Dennis probably said it better than this old soldier probably ever can say. You know, all of us struggle. All of us fall down sometimes, and we struggle to get back up. And I talked about the fact that sometimes we don't want to struggle. We just sit there and wait for something to happen to us. Never think that you're alone. There's people there that want to take care of you. Don't quit fighting. Get up, do something, whether or not you want. You maybe never go to the Olympics just like me, but maybe that's your goal. But have purpose in life. Don't quit. Too many people say, I can't. I don't never say I can't. I will. I can. I believe, and believe in yourself each and every day. Find that community that you fit into, that they trust you and they want to help you. Because you have a lot of life there, and you got to make sure that you just keep moving in the right direction, because I tell you, we all love each other and we want to help each other each and every day. So just never stop believing. Never stop believing. Thanks for watching and thanks to Bungalow Studios and, of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.